Hello and welcome to Slay Sunday. I'm your host, Louise Hazel, and in this week's episode, we're going to be discussing MTV's The Challenge, Champs vs. Stars Season 3, and we're going to be talking about the D word. And joining me this week, we have reality TV star. He's an actor and a fashion designer. He's the winner of the challenge Dirty 30 and the founder of fashion brand Strapped. It's Jordan Wisely. So, Jordy.
Yeah.
Have you been watching this season of the challenge Champs vs. Stars?
But of course.
I obviously you were around my house. We had a little viewing party. Mm-hmm. There were snacks. There was like unicorn cake. It was all kinds of chilled.
There
were shots fired.
Tori's cake. And if anybody follows Louise,
his Instagram, Tori. It was kind of, I didn't know whether it was a gift or not. I didn't know whether to eat it or shove it in her face.
Tasty. But offensive.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know.
That was kind of the vibe. But I appreciated it nonetheless.
It did have a unicorn on it, so.
That's right. Which I appreciate, because that's kind of like Tori Deal's character. She's kind of a unicorn, isn't she?
She's the challenge unicorn.
For sure. What were your first impressions of the stars? Because I know that you've competed with... Tell me who you've competed, first of all, with regards to the champs in this series.
In the series, what do you mean?
So we had CT, Wes.
Of the champs. Of the champs side, I've competed with everyone but Cam.
Right, okay.
I think.
So you pretty much know those guys. You know their personalities.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know when to, like, calling, like, bullshit and stuff
so
like that.
So Tori just won challenge, but I know her.
Yeah.
And everybody else, multiple challenges with.
So what were your first impressions of us guys? Because let's face it, it's basically them and us, and I. You're the champ, we're the stars.
Yeah.
So like when you kind of saw the lineup, and obviously we had a discussion beforehand, you know I was going back in, but what did you think of the other guys?
I loved that you were going back in, because that the mental side and a grasp of the mental game is something that stars and pros lack when coming into this.
Yeah.
After seeing the stars lineup on this one, I think you guys have a shot. I think Drake is going to be a sleeper for you guys. Mm. I really think so, because he's one of the... I bet he does a lot of body weight stuff. Like, I bet he's a guy that could do, like, a shit ton of pull-ups or something.
This is the funny thing. I'm like, Drake Bell is either going to be amazing or dog shit. Like, for me, I felt like he was a dark horse. I'm like, this guy is the one we need to watch. And he was just, you know, throughout the season, he's going to come up and give us just pure jokes the whole way along.
I got a lot of good feedback about him from Tori. I mean, Tori was also fangirling most of the time.
Sure, but, she was. Who wouldn't?
I did, like, when I first found out that he was going to be on the show, I was like, you know what? I bet he's weirdly good.
So definitely,
we'll see. I'm excited to see how it plays out. All I know is like what Tori would give me.
Sure.
You know, in between.
Who do you think the alpha male was in our group? So we had Arian Foster, Booby, Casper, Jose.
So, looking at them, I figured Arian would be quiet. Booby, I figured those two would kind of like chill, but I mean physically, like, they're the dominant ones, right? They're the big athletes.
So who would you say is the one to watch?
But I could see, looking at them, that I thought Casper was gonna be the, like, standout leader.
Got
because
you.
Of vocals
personality,
right? Exactly. Yeah, he's very type A. Mm-hmm. and that's what that role is, even though, like, physically maybe, like, Arian Foster is like the beast on this show, right? But I think the leader role for you guys is going to be Casper, just because he's going to have the voice to step up and do it.
Sure. I mean, obviously being on, you know, on that side, thrown into the challenge with those guys, I was quite surprised. You know, Arian, and I always find this with the kind of more senior sports guys, they're very quiet from the get-go. Remember our season when we had Kamari on Wimbley and Sean Merriman, not so much, but those guys were kind of quiet.
I love Sean. I just smile when I think of Sean. I love that guy.
He's such a unit, man.
Oh, yeah.
They had some big guys in that first scene.
Yeah.
You must have been shook. What happened?
I mean, I was ready. I knew that, like, the wonkiness of the challenge would be what, like, saves us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was thinking back. I'm like, whoa, dude, like, if Hallbrock comes up and one of these two and, like, lights out as in Hallbrock, like, I'll hang my cleats up.
Oh,
like, that's
God.
Like, I'm not going down a hallway with that man. It's not worth
just leave
my
it
spinal
alone.
Cord. Yeah, I would hang the cleats up for that. And I'd say hang the cleats up because I would not come back to a challenge that I was like, nope.
No, thanks.
I would make the decision right there to just retire completely.
You don't want that fight.
Huh.
So you were saying, obviously, you and Tori get on like a house on fire. You guys are tight. So you must have been coaching Tori from the sidelines.
Well, hold on. I have a question for you. Now, I addressed your last question because you said alphas and I just like went towards males. Mm-hmm. But it kind of went more towards who's the leader of the pack. And you, being here before, and I know you're... So I don't know about that dynamic. How?
I was just trying to
imagine
deflect.
That they just looked at you. And I can see that in the show. Like, what they've showed, like, yeah, they look to you. Like, Booby and... who
Casper.
Was sitting, Casper. There you go. Yep. Yeah, you guys were all sitting there. So how easy was that? Did you just walk right in and they were like, oh, well, you've done it, so we'll listen.
Do you know what? It was quite the opposite, if I'm honest. Like, there was, obviously, so this is the difficult thing for me coming in as a person who had been on the show before. I knew that my role on the show this time was going to be that of coach. However, I came in to my team, the stars, not knowing a single one of them, being the Brit that had a different accent, completely being the outsider. And the only person I knew on the show were the champs. So automatically their opinion of me was like, who is this chick?
You're one of them.
You're one of them. Like, there was distrust.
Oh, I know that feeling because in the lobby, you know, when everyone's getting there and sizing you up.
They're
saying the champs are coming in and saying hi to you and giving you a hug.
Yes.
And I didn't even think about you not knowing these stars or pros.
Right.
Because on pros, Chance vs. Pros, you knew some of them. You had been to Olympics with some of them.
Yes, I'd known like Lolo Jones.
Lindsay?
I hadn't met Lindsay before, but at least we had that kind of shared bond that we're all kind of athletes.
Olympians?
This is them. Yeah, this is them versus us. It's easy. We didn't know them. They didn't know us. Whereas this one round was a whole different ball game. I had to kind of earn the trust and respect of my team. And from the get-go, I was kind of faced with the decision of, who am I playing for?
Mm.
Who am I going to be in this game? Am I going to be a champ or am I going to be a star? And I'm not going to give anything away because...
Because you could definitely do that. Actually, it hits me now. In your position, you could go sleeper for the champs.
Right.
And go like, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Or,
I could be just teeing myself up for the final and just getting rid of the stars slowly.
You know how this works.
Of course. you know, I made a kind of very firm decision from the beginning that how I was going to play my game, and I kind of stuck to it. Kind of. Yeah. And there
you
was
can't all the way stick to it because...
There was a little bit of dirt in there.
Shit happens.
That's right. And it's the challenge. Things change and you kind of have to adapt, right?
Absolutely.
For sure. So... Going back to the challenge, you're a challenge champion.
Yeah.
You won
the champ
season.
Champ.
Yeah. Dirty 30. Talk me through that.
That was really cool. Dirty 30 was really cool because I took three seasons off.
Yeah.
You know.
You'd done previously Rivals 2?
I've done. So my very first one.
Yep.
Very first challenge was Rivals 2.
Yep.
Then I did Free Agents. And got my butt handed to me.
Sure.
But learned a lot.
Yep.
And then came back for X's 2 right after that one and won that one.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, you know, I got a lot of things that I want to do outside of the challenge. And so started doing those and been working on a lot. Took three seasons off. And then I was like, okay. I was getting a lot of pressure from the producers. They're like, yo, this is a good one.
We need Jordan back on our screens.
And, well, and then I did Champs vs. Pros.
Yes.
And that's different, right? We film in LA.
Yeah, we have fun.
And it's a much shorter time.
It's a holiday for you guys.
It is a holiday for us. So I did that, and then while shooting Champs Pros, they're like, yo, you should really do season 30.
So they're basically telling you this is the one for you.
They were, you know, because we know nothing before. Yeah. We don't know the theme. We don't know where we're going, and we're not supposed to know who is going to be on it.
So you don't know whether they're just spinning your line to get you on.
I'm like, do they just want me to come on? Like, I have so much stuff that I'm working on here. Like, can I leave for 3 months?
Right.
And I was like, all right, let's go. Mm-hmm. Because playing with you guys, like, it was fun again. And mm-hmm.
It was easy. 4 weeks.
Yeah. I was like, okay, like, let's do this thing.
Sure.
So I go, and lo and behold, win the dang thing. And it's the biggest one that they've done.
Yes, Jordy. Amazing.
So that was a good one to do. And
that was a hell of a prize money, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What,
yeah,
$450,000.
$450,000.
Mother ching. What are you spending it on?
A lot. Hey. A lot went into the bank.
Hey. IRS has got it all.
And
IRS
then IRS takes so much. But no, I have, you know, you and I are friends outside the show and everything, and there is a lot that I've got my hands in.
We're going to touch base on those things.
Yeah,
in a bit.
So it's fun. I'm just trying to keep myself busy. You know how this town works. You got to be doing a little bit of everything.
Sure.
And that's why I love the challenge and love, you know, getting to come and compete, because it allows me to follow dreams outside of the show. So,
and there's literally like, you're kind of just unstoppable. Let's put it that way.
Thank you. I think
that's the only compliment you're going to get. So just soak it up. Sit in that, bask in it. but going back to the challenge, what was like the hardest one for you, whether it would be the hardest game or the hardest series that you've taken part in? What's the memory that's like, yeah, I learned a lot from that?
I learned the most really on the season on Free Agents, and that was where I did the worst. And the weirdest thing was I could have walked to the final. I could have made it to the final if everything, right? I mean, you can't really say for certainty, but if everything would have worked out the way that it did, and I just wouldn't have said, you know what, I'll go in. I would have ended up like, so I had the people, I had the alliance.
What was it that made you say, so you self-nominated for an elimination? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Which is the first thing I learned in Champs versus Pros was never self-nominate.
Never,
and I remember,
never nominate yourself, because everyone will take that as a free get out of jail card. And
so what was it that made you do that?
I was very consumed with like playing like sport, like you come from a sportsman's background, right? Yeah. And that's how I thought this game was played.
Yeah.
And
with honor.
Right. You know, and I was just like, you know what? Like I talked it, so I better walk it. Right. And just like one of those things.
Talk it like I walk it.
Yeah.
And
in turn, and then it got me, you know, so I end up losing and all that. But then looking back on it, and that one, if I would have went to the final, I would have walked home with $125,000, which was one of the biggest paydays that they had given, like, to that time.
So, right, there has been, like, you know, people have kind of said, oh, Jordan's a know-it-all, and that there's this perhaps a certain cockiness about you. Is it true? Is it cockiness? Is it arrogance? What is it? Is that what made you make that move, or was it something else?
You know, it's something else, but what I learned on that is perception is reality. Got and you. It does not matter. And this is something that I hadn't fully learned, like, because I did a real world, and then I did a challenge, and then I did this challenge. So this is my third season on television, and I still hadn't really learned what it meant to be on television.
Got
and
you.
What it meant to be edited, right? And perception. And it does not matter the intention that I had in my mind, because my intentions were not to be cocky or be arrogant or like that. It was solely, essentially, pride and sportsmanship. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you need to go home, and instead of getting somebody else to do my dirty work, I'll do it.
I'll do it for you.
But what I learned in that process was, yeah, perception. Mm-hmm. And it's you know what? You do not have to be right. People don't have to know. People don't have to know that you're right. Because a lot of times, like, it would just be like, oh, like, bet this is going to happen. And even if it does happen, it doesn't matter. Like, you're the know-it-all that, like, said it first, right? Yeah. Like, oh. And then if you're right a lot, people are like, oh, fuck this know-it-all.
He's so
right?
cocky.
Like, right. And then it's, you know, then it's arrogance and that. So I learned that it does not matter what other people think or, you know, because... Or it doesn't matter what you have in your head because people are going to believe what they see.
What they want.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Like their perception is their reality. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's like pointless trying to change that?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because like, you know, even on this series, you have people's opinions constantly on your Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of just come to enjoy them all. I'm kind of like, rather than get into it with someone I don't know on Twitter, because as far as I'm concerned, like, I got better things to be doing with my day. I'm like, I like your opinion. I value the fact that you've got an opinion. I don't agree with it at all.
Right.
If you want to, you know what I mean?
I like that you took the time.
Yeah, I like that you took the time out of your day to tweet that. But am I going to comment on it? Am I going to take the time out of my day to react to it? Hell no.
No.
Unless it's something positive.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's how I guess I, you know, deal with that stuff. I'm like, yeah, props.
Reality TV is a crazy thing.
Mm.
And the audience, there's a large part of the audience that they believe it and they become very consumed with the characters.
So invested.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
And people's fans.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to throw some shade at you, your fans will attack me and they will say some nasty things.
Yeah. So I didn't realize when I was getting into this franchise, because I'm going to call it a franchise. That's what
it's absolutely.
It has got some pure fandom. And I'm not going to lie, like, well, my first season, I'd kind of checked out by the end of it. But my game, like, this season is completely different. I got so invested. And I can remember being on the phone to you and being like, I'm so annoyed. I'm addicted to this shit. And then I was talking to Wes and I'm like, I totally understand why you just keep coming back. Like, Wes has been there for what? A good decade or more.
Way more.
Yeah.
More. Yeah.
And, you know, like, I totally get it.
And fans have been there even longer than us.
Do you know what? Like, I thought, because obviously I come over from the UK. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily have a perception of the show before. And I thought it was like 14-year-old kids would be watching this. This is MTV.
Oh, that's whatever. Yeah, MTV.
That's what I used to watch when I was 14. And then I'm going about my business, just, you know, strutting around LA. And these hot 35-year-olds are just like, you're Louise from The Challenge. I'm like, yes, I am. I am.
Yeah, it's crazy. The demographic is a little bit older.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a
us thing because people have been watching for years, for literally over decades. Mm. And the show's been on. This is, they're filming season 33.
Right now.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite and probably like long lasting memory so far from The Challenge? What's that little nugget of gold that you will take away and just kind of warms your soul? The feel, you know, that one moment of pride or achievement, what is it?
Winning my first challenge was pretty dope because it was coming off of getting sent home early.
Right.
Which I had never not made a final.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get sent home early.
And you smashed it as well,
and
didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even like they tried to take away our lead like all the time. Mm-hmm. And then we still end up putting more on them. And when I finished that, not just because of the glory that comes
Camilla,
with the show.
It was
me and Sarah Rice.
Okay, got you.
And this
was
her first win, too. She had this was her, like, 10th show.
Yep.
She had never won. She'd been to 4 finals and never won. Only gotten, like, 3rd.
Got you.
And so it was, like, a big deal for her, too, because she was kind of an underdog always in the show. And I had learned so much, and I had played that game so different than I did the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
Previous season, you can be good, right? You can be good, but if you know you're good, and you start telling people that you're good, that's not good. That's not good. So I learned. I'm like, look, just go in there and play the game.
Right.
Let people like it.
Let people make their own minds up.
People like winners. So all you have to do is play good, play nice, and you'll probably you'll probably go.
And try and keep your mouth shut
as best I can. And that is one thing
that
the challenge has taught me. Yeah, because I see my mind works in. I see the easiest way. Mm-hmm. I can break things down and see the easy way to do things. I mean, I grew up building homes as a kid, building pools, doing concrete, right? Engineering things. And some people do not want to be told the easy. They just need to find out on their own.
Sure.
And that's their process. Need to let that happen. I don't have to be right. And that's what the challenge has taught me. It's like, let people do their thing.
Are you going to do another one?
If I can, like, it would be really fun if I can. Yeah, but, you know, to check out for, it's minimum 3 months cut off. Like, no, nothing. And we were gone when, the last time I was gone, it was when Trump and Hillary were going at it. So we were begging begging.
When you came back, was Trump president?
No, it was.
That would
it was
a trip,
like 2 weeks before the election. So we were gone for 4 months leading up to the election, and we would ask the producers at night, like as they turned off our lights and everything, we'd be like, "Could you give us something? Well, this person came out and said this, and this person said this, and Hillary did this, and there's a video
drama
of this, and like that's where they are, and like Trump got more people." We're like, "Okay,
shit." That's nuts, missing those types of moments. All that beef. Because it was
that
good beef.
That was good beef.
So,
good tea.
I want to change direction slightly. I want to talk about the big D word. And ladies, before you get excited,
Louise.
We're not going to talk about that.
Louise.
So, and this is going to be an interesting one because I'm talking about disability. Now, I feel like this is actually the wrong word to use in your case. Because you're a person who I think has a physical uniqueness. We're going to use the term physical uniqueness.
Thank you.
Because I feel like your physical uniqueness is it's not a disability at all. That's something I feel that takes away from a person. I feel like you've almost become more or, you know, better because of your physical uniqueness.
Thank you. One. And I absolutely believe it. I didn't see it as a kid, but I absolutely see that now, like as a young adult. The word disability, like I guess you have to have it, right? I don't, but like the whole dis, you know, like the connotation with the prefix dis.
Negative, isn't
right?
it?
Yeah, like it's negative. When this is a really cool topic and just cool coincidences. April is limb difference awareness month.
Wicked.
So and that's, you know, just a good cool coincidence, but it's difference is a cool, right? It's just like it's a limb difference. But I 100% believe that this was a bonus. Or not a bonus isn't the right word, but this was a tool.
Yeah,
for me. It was absolutely a tool, and I just had to look at it, but I had to be reminded constantly. Like my parents never, any time I would try and use it as an excuse. I remember one time I was only carrying like a couple grocery bags in.
Yeah.
And my mom like said something. I was like, "Mom, I only have one hand. How am I going to get the door?" And she goes, "Absolutely not. Get your ass back over here."
Wicked.
And so it is on, you know, and that's, I believe that we are taught, we are grown, you know, we're not born bad or evil or wrong or
anything.
This
is something you were born with. It's not something, it wasn't an accident. Tell us about that and how it kind of shaped your childhood.
Hugely shaped. Yeah. My father is like the sportsman, right? Like college wrestler, state champ wrestler, multi-state champ football player, football in college, like all this stuff, right? And then when I was born, the doctors didn't know about my hand. They couldn't see it on the ultrasounds or anything. And I was born, and this is how my parents tell the story. Like, you know, you're waiting for the doctor to say everything's great. And he did. He said, "Everything's great. But
Right.
He's missing all the digits on his left hand. My dad said he just took a breath. Mm-hmm. He went into the next room mm-hmm. while they're cleaning mom up and me and everything. And he said he just laid there mm-hmm. for about 5-10 minutes. And then when he got up, he said, nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's literally what it was. And so
that just gave me goosebumps. Yeah.
And so from then on,
yeah,
baseball, football, soccer, wrestling, mm-hmm. Bow hunting, right? I mean, you got to hold the bow hunt, all everything. He made me do it. Mm-hmm. He made me baseball. I started out, I would catch the ball,
yep.
put the glove on the ground, pick up the ball, throw it, pick the glove back up, put it on. And now, it's seamless. You wouldn't even know, mm-hmm. you know, and went on to play at the college level, yeah. baseball. So it's we are so powerful.
Mm.
Like, human beings are so powerful, it's mm. ridiculous, but we won't allow ourselves to be.
Right. Were you ever told that you can't do something? Were you ever picked on? Like, what?
Oh, that
was
that? Yeah, that was the most benefit came from that. This is where like the perception and like reality television perception and all that kind of comes into full circle, because I absolutely know what it feels like to be outcast or different or mm-hmm. right. Because when we're little, we do not know. Kids do not know the power of words, mm-hmm. so they just say.
Yep.
They just say,
mm-hmm.
and every day, I'd go to school and kids something freak or. Stubby or this or no hand or whatever, right? And whatever kids would think of. And I would come home and I'd get sad and I'd cry.
The little bastards.
And right, sons of bitches. And then my parents would tell me, hey, listen, you go back and you tell them that a shark bit your hand off, that you got in a fight with a shark, it bit your hand off, but you got him and you got away.
I love it.
And see what happens. And that sparked this thing. And so from 6 years old, so from like first grade, kindergarten, first grade, all through elementary school,
mm-hmm.
I came up with so many stories. Dogs, alligators, lawnmowers, fan blades,
mm-hmm.
cars, carburetors, motocross, anything, right? That and amazing. That's how I would break the like faux pas of being mm-hmm. different. And then,
so you were like a freaking hero,
right?
Out there,
yeah, yeah. And then you hit middle school and high school, and then sports,
right?
Right. And now you have a reason to be, because that's honestly what sports do. It's an equalizer, because we want heroes, or we want people that can do things that we can't. Mm. And so once you show that, oh, they can be valuable, then it's like, okay, we'll accept you now.
Mm.
But I learned that. Young.
So do you think you drew your mental strength from those stories that you used to hide behind, and you built your confidence perhaps that way, or did it come via sports? Because you are, you know, literally one of the dopest people I've met.
Thanks.
In LA since I've been here, and I've been
Thank
here nine
you.
months. I've met a lot of people, and like, you know, Jordan and I go hiking together. Like, this guy is a beast. I call him the mountain goat. There's literally nothing he can't do. He's the guy that could literally freaking fix your car, tune your bike, pave your freaking
uh-huh.
garage, and then teach you how to act at the same time.
Yeah,
like, where do you draw that mental strength from? Where does it come from? Is it something you've always had?
It was something that you had to have in our household mm-hmm. growing up. So I grew up in Oklahoma, and I know you're a Brit, so you may not know, but this
no
is where
idea.
Cowboys and Indians
got you.
Still happen.
Oh, for real?
No.
you
no.
have me.
I'm from a tiny little town in Oklahoma, though. And this, I mean, we still have horses and everything out there, and we were out in the middle of nowhere, so you had to rely on yourself and your like neighbors around
right.
you. And as far as like equating it to society and the challenge, you learn when you're out there, you learn how to suffer
mm-hmm.
a little bit, like, for lack of a better term. But like, even mentally, when like stuff's not going great, and like I'm shoveling shit in the barn and
mm-hmm.
dad's yelling at me because I didn't broom this right, or you didn't clean this right. And you're just like, come on. I'll tell you, that no boss mm-hmm. is going to amount to be worse than your father yelling at you while you're shoveling pig shit. You know, like, so it prepares you in that way, and that you see that. And then sports for the physicality part, right? Because mm-hmm. on challenges, on finals, when we're doing, I mean, the first final that I won, we did 35 miles in the first day.
Whoa.
Between kayaking, biking, swimming, running, you know, climbing, everything.
That's extreme.
And I have been to the point, which I know you have, we've talked about this, of passing out in a workout.
Mm-hmm.
And when your workouts are that hard, when you prepare that hard, you can do that when your adrenaline's pumping even more
right.
in the real thing. Mm-hmm. And that's same for real life.
Yep.
If you push yourself and challenge yourself mentally on your own time, you'll do that at work.
Mm.
Right.
Deep. So. Is there anything you've yet to conquer, like physical challenge-wise? Because I know you're a badass hiker. I know you've wrestled. I know you've done this, that. What is there left for Jordan Wisely to do physically?
I cannot wait to start doing ultra marathons.
Mm.
Marathon
Desable and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I want to do the 100 plus. Yeah.
You're
but
nuts.
I'm making myself wait until I'm a little bit older.
Yeah.
Because it as you know, it takes a different body type. You really have to transform your body
completely
to be ready for those conditions.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to do that yet.
Yeah.
You know, I want to eat a certain way. And I
can never understand these people that are just like, yeah, I'm running a marathon. And it's like, you do realize it's 26.2 miles, right? Yeah. And then it's like,
there's a couple of hours.
Yeah. That's like 4 or 5, sometimes even 6 hours of running. And off maybe 3 months training, a lot of people do. And I'm like, okay, you obviously don't like your back or your knees or anything. Go ahead. Do you know what I mean? And I think the London Marathon's just been, and all my friends are in pieces this week. They're absolutely shot to pieces. And that's the good runners. So I can only imagine what everybody else is feeling. That's a biggie.
Marathons are they're like, ugh, because it's the same like sidewalk and like city stuff for 20, like it's the same stuff.
Monotonous.
I love terrain.
Mm.
I love terrain. Like
that's
I can,
why you're so good on our hikes.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I mean, all of my running, all of my long distance stuff is done on dirt, up and down elevation.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do like on a regular day, I'll do 4 to 6 miles of running. And as long as it's just changing terrain, I can go. Like,
nuts.
I'm stimulated enough to like
you're
just
nuts.
Keep going.
You're more of an athlete than I am.
No,
but you.
No. I've seen you run at full speed, and oh, it blew my mind when I saw that you and Lolo on that challenge.
That wasn't even full speed.
Ooh, oh, jeez, it was insane. It was literally like watching cheetahs in the wild.
Go after
run
prey.
After a couple of white women.
Yeah. Like, I literally felt like
Camilla
we were chasing
and
death.
Then we're run, they were like, oh, they're doing their normal, like, we're running. And then you and Lolo, right?
We were just locked in.
I was like, oh my God, there's literally dust behind them. And I just smoked it up this hill. Like,
you did.
I just killed everybody. So I'm on a high horse. And then I see them and I was like,
yeah, I'm not going to lie.
So deflated. I was like, dang.
That was a challenge. This was in the first series of Champs versus Pros where we just kind of had to turn on the burners. And I was kind of like, nah. Like, low, just chill. We don't need to sprint down there. We need to work out what the puzzle is.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like trying to get her to hold back, but she's like a fire,
sea
like
biscuit
a cannon. Yeah, she just wants it. She sees the rabbit. She's going for it. And I'm just like, we need to leave some in the tank because if we don't get those puzzles right, we're going to be up and down here all day long. That was madness. But it was nice to just open out the stride.
It was so cool. My mind was seriously blown.
I've got a little bit of I don't know if it's a spoiler, but there is a little head-to-head between Wes and I in this series.
I heard about that.
And it involves speed.
I heard about that.
So keep your eyes peeled. This is going to be an interesting one.
This is good.
You know, athletics and sport is not the only thing you're good at. Acting as well. So you were on, and you're still on, Oprah Winfrey Network on If Loving You Is Wrong?
No. Ben is, Officer Ben Bryant is,
Officer Ben, ladies.
I'm off the force.
Officer Ben. Sorry, yes, carry on, Officer Ben.
Officer Ben.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm off the force, so I mean, Ben could actually come back. What happened
to Officer Ben?
I was under the influence of some bad people, right? Eddie, who's played by Joel Rush, who's a dear friend of mine too.
Good girl gone bad.
Oh, buddy. Oh yeah. Eddie put Ben through it, so it was a lot. Two seasons under Eddie. It's a lot to deal with. Ben got a little strung out, but. Who's to say you can't come back,
Michelle. And that series is directed and produced by Tyler Perry?
Written, directed, and produced by Tyler Perry. I've never seen a man work as hard as he does. Right. Not in Hollywood, anyway.
Incredible. How did that come about, your taking part in that?
This is one of those things that you say, like, this never happens. But, like, I actually have this story where it's like, it did happen.
Tell us about that.
So it literally all wraps in with challenge and sport as well. So an old challenger, Frank Sweeney,
right,
used to teach at SoulCycle. Mm-hmm. And so Frank would call me when he had open bikes and be like, yo, come ride. So I went and rode. And after a class, this big man comes up to me and he's like, hey, man, are you an actor? And I'm like, yeah, actually I am. He goes, all right, well, no bullshit or anything. I know this town's a lot of bullshit, but you look like
Officer Ben,
an actor. You look like an Officer Ben, that I had in mind for this role that I just wrote into to a show that I do. Would you want to read for it? And I was like, yeah. And so he's like, okay, I'll have my producer reach out to you. So I'm thinking, like, this guy's smoke and mirror. By the way, the guy is Tyler Perry.
What?
You're just like, of course I know. He's like, oh, dude, I don't know. Like, I'm Tyler Perry. I'm like,
did
he
go hard in the spin class?
Oh, yeah. The dude gets it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was actually, I had no idea it was in the class, though. Right? And then afterwards, now that we work out together.
Sure.
The dude gets it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, he puts in work. Like,
so
in
he's
the office,
not just writing,
office.
He's not just directing, producing. He's out there training his ass too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my kind of guy.
It's guy. I was not. I'll be honest. I was not a Tyler Perry fan. Like, of course, we all know Tyler Perry, but mm-hmm. I wasn't like a Tyler Perry fan until I met him and worked with him.
Right.
I am a fan.
What did you learn from him, if anything?
Do more for others than mm-hmm. you do for yourself, and work really freaking hard.
Mm.
That's one thing that Tyler, he appreciates someone who goes out and gets it on their own, because mm-hmm. that's what he did.
Right.
Right. And he encourages that in the people around him. And he goes through great lengths to surround himself with good people.
Mm.
But once he does, once you're in that circle, and once you're in that Tyler Perry Studios crew, you know what is demanded of you, and you hit that
mm-hmm.
because your boss and your friend, he respects you and gives it right back.
Got you.
And that was the coolest thing, especially for how you're no stranger to Hollywood. You know how Hollywood sets work.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so disorganized, and efficiency is a word that does not exist on the sets of Hollywood. And
from our conversations previously, you said that he runs this stuff like clockwork.
It's insane. We shoot an average of 70 pages of script in a day.
What?
It's unheard of. I mean, studios, network studios in Hollywood can barely get through 10.
Wow.
10 in a day.
How does he do it?
As soon, everyone knows what they're supposed to do.
Right.
Right. And as soon as he says, cut, mm-hmm. check the gates, everyone moves. Okay, everyone has their shooting list. What's next? Scene 32B, it's in this corner. Move, move, move. Everyone's moving there. They're moving the light there. I mean, it helps that he has Tyler Perry Studios, mm-hmm. right? It's that he has everything he needs. So he has his police station there. He has the neighborhood over there. And to watch these guys just go. And Tyler, as all this like controlled chaos is going on around him, he'll walk up to you and be like, okay, let me hear it, which means, start the scene back.
You're
like,
on.
Let me hear it.
Oh,
yeah.
My
and
God.
You start walking through it. And as he's listening, he'll block it, be like, I want you here, you're here, keep going. And back up a little bit. Yeah, keep going. There. Yeah, I like that. That's good here. All right, I'm ready to shoot this. Where's my light? Okay. Remember, are we ready?
And you're in.
Quiet. Action.
Ooh.
And you know what is what you know, and he gives you such a platform to succeed that it is now on you. He's now given you the reins. He's done everything he can and the crew around him, and he has made sure that they are happy, that everyone is happy. Now succeed.
It's
now
down
do
to
it.
You.
Now do your job.
Right.
And
so, oh my gosh. See,
you
that
do not
just,
see that anywhere.
That reminded me of the Olympic Games. What you just said, like, it took me back to, like, the minute you step out onto the track and there's 80,000 people, so there might be 80 crew on set all watching you, and all of a sudden it's down to you.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about being down to you, talk to me about this project, The Hunt. So this is a movie that you co-wrote?
Yep.
Tell me more about it.
Co-wrote. So I have a writing partner. I have a production company,
mm-hmm.
Strap Media. And my partner and I, Sean Crampton, we launched Strap Media because we want to produce our own original content.
Why is it so important to you that you do it on your own?
You know, it... Hollywood and all industries, really. Not just Hollywood, all industries. It's so much who you know.
Right.
Right? And then you can join this rat race of, mm-hmm. like... going to the right clubs, shaking hands with the right people, kissing the right babies, mm-hmm. and, you know, having the right girlfriend and yep. all this stuff. Or you can just make it yourself. If you really believe what you're doing is right, mm-hmm. then just make it yourself and see what happens. And that's what we decided to do. I mean, we've been in LA for many, many years, going to many, 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 many auditions, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, you know how that works. A lot of no's to mm-hmm. get one or two big yeses.
Yeah.
Right. So we launched the production company. We have a couple scripts that are yep. written, but we picked one that we think is really good for us to really like hang our hats on, mm-hmm. like, to really say like, okay, this is our first one. It's a franchise movie.
Yep.
So it's one of three. And we start shooting mid-June.
Yep. It's only around the corner.
It is. Yeah, we're right there. We're casting. We're currently casting. Yeah, we're going through table reads.
Can I have a little read?
Oh, come on. Come on in. Yeah.
I'm going to read.
Yeah.
I'm going to read.
It is. It's based on people from the military.
Yep. Right?
Our nation's top killers. And trying to help cure... or find a way to cure their PTSD. Now, this is post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
And we associate PTSD with soldiers mm-hmm. most of the time, but far more people than just soldiers deal with PTSD. And this is family members of soldiers. This is people that go through car accidents or traumatic event. Yeah, any traumatic event, a death in the mm-hmm. family. And we see all sides of that. We see civilians affected by the disorder, and we see soldiers. Now, where it becomes a real movie is that the government has a program in place to try and combat the disorder,
mm-hmm.
PTSD. And
how do they do that?
Oh, Louise, they use killing. Right, it's a vicious circle. So they're gonna try and use killing. to cure the PTSD that comes from killing.
Oh,
so
my.
It's a very...
And you wrote this?
Yeah, yeah. So Sean and I wrote this, co-writer. I'm executive producing.
It sounds like The Purge.
A little.
Yeah.
You know,
this is a franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a franchise. This will be the first of three, and we couldn't be more excited. We're very excited that this will be the first film from Strap Media.
Amazing. And where is it at? Is it fully funded? What's the deal?
So, as you know, making a film is very expensive. We are funded, but we're always looking for more. Now, yep. most films in this genre are
how much are we looking for?
5 to 10 million, right?
Woo!
Right, but we
yes.
are about to do this thing for less than $500,000.
Okay, and how much do we have raised so far? Because let's face it, there might be people listening that want to chip in.
We have an Indiegogo going yep. right now that has you know, roughly 15 days, roughly 2 weeks yep. left on it. We have over $100,000 in that Indiegogo.
Amazing.
Anything helps. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything helps. And when you're making a movie, everything costs. And you got to pay the city just to be there. And we start shooting in Boston.
Right.
Mid-June.
That is so just around the corner.
Yeah, right there.
I hear you.
Start shooting. Got a great team. We're excited. We're Amazing. Really excited. We need to get you in there, and we got a couple roles that I think you'd be. We need a strong woman.
Well, we certainly got one of those. For sure.
There we go.
Nuts! You're amazing. The other thing I wanted to segue into is your passion for fashion. But here's the thing, because I feel like, you know, we talked about you being able, literally being a jack of all trades, being able to do everything. Is it that you have a passion for fashion because you are now the founder of a apparel company or a founder of an apparel brand mm-hmm. called Strapped?
Yep.
Now, is it that you have a passion for fashion? In my mind, you have a passion for creating things, because this isn't just like your typical fashion, we're selling t-shirts. This is mm-hmm. completely different. Tell us more about it.
Man, it is definitely, you said it really great. It's definitely a passion for creating, because the fashion side of this company, I started a company over 2 years ago building motorcycles. Right. Motorcycles have been in my life since I was a kid. Started wrenching on them when I was, you know, 16, 17.
Wrenching.
Yeah. And then when I got to LA,
yep.
I found enough success to where I could build bikes in mm-hmm. my free time and made a company doing it. That company ended up, like, it all kind of led to, well, we're in leather, we're in denim, let's do a line.
Officer yeah. Ben loves leather.
Officer Ben loves leather. Oh, you've had that one saved. You had it saved. You're like, I can't wait to ask about the leather. Officer Ben.
Officer Ben.
I chucked that one out.
Yeah.
Bing.
Yeah, I'll take it.
So yeah, it really snowballed. Strapped MFG really snowballed. And yeah, we release in a week and a half.
Is this one of your pieces?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of the jackets.
So so we've got denim, leather.
Denim, leather, cotton. I mean, it's a full collection. So yeah, sweatpants, terries.
So it's outerwear, it's sweatpants.
Yeah. So in the first collection, I really wanted to focus on everyday wear.
Right.
So t-shirts that you can wear to underneath a blazer mm-hmm. and wear on a red carpet.
Yep.
If you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Or a t-shirt to just lay around on the couch. Or, I mean, now it's a look to look very unkept, mm-hmm. but to do it on purpose.
Hipster.
And so we want to, I have yet to find a brand that facilitates that. Like, everyone has like one good shirt or one good this, and so I have to piece it together. Mm-hmm. So our first collection really, really speaks to your everyday shit.
Got you. And you've got a launch party coming up soon.
May 3rd. So anybody in the Hollywood area, May 3rd. I know you and I are both there. I will make you. I'm going to drag you there. You're going to be there.
You better hook me up with a little.
Yeah, bring Ben. Bring everybody. May 3rd we'll be at the Mondrian
mm-hmm.
on Sunset at Sky Bar. We have mm-hmm. we have the whole pool deck. So bring your floaties. No, don't bring floaties.
If there was one person who you would be like, right, if I could have them wear this jacket, who would that person be? Like, you know what I mean? You must create something and be like, there's somebody in mind when you create stuff. Personally, that's how I create.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a huge driving force behind the collection one, I love hip hop.
Yeah.
And ASAP Rocky.
This guy,
I love his flow.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like, so as a musician and he is a creator. He's mm-hmm. not just a musician. And that is one thing I love about this dude. But he also has the eye for fashion, right? I mean,
he looks so good in clothes, man. That Dior campaign.
It is insane.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I have a ton of respect for Rocky, and it was actually really cool. We were at the Coachella, you know, just passed.
Yep.
And we were at the Revolve party at the Revolve Festival. And ASAP comes out, you know, on the pool and everything, and we're just like, yes, like, oh, this is it. And this is, you know, this is Strap's first, you know, first time being invited as Strap to a Coachella, and then to see ASAP, I'm like, yeah, we gotta
get it. So here's what I would have done. At that point, I would have just grabbed a glass of red wine, dashed it on his t-shirt,
and be like, hey, man, have mine.
Hey, man, take this.
Damn it!
Oh, my God.
So... yeah, moving. You know, I just want to create. I just want to do, honestly, in layman's terms, I just want to do cool shit with my friends.
And you are.
Thank you.
You are.
Yeah.
Jordan, thank you for coming on Slay Sunday.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm Louise Hazel. You can find me at Louise Hazel on Twitter and Instagram. This is Jordan Wisely. Where can people find you? We want to know. Instagram, Twitter, Strapped, and your Indiegogo. Go for it.
Find me on Instagram, Jordan_Wisely. Twitter is Jordan WUSA, and Strapped MFG on everything. And if go to our Indiegogo, check out the stocking fields, and we have producer credits available.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. Hollywood.
Yay, yay. Wicked. You'll be on IMDb.
Officially.
Officially.
Wicked. Jordan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Such
it's always
pleasure.
My pleasure.
The Mountain Goat.
Thank you. Goat. We'll just go with goat.
The goat. Wicked.
Yeah.
Yay! Yeah! Killed it!
That was great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me, guys. This is Slay Sunday. I've been Louise Hazel. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Louise Hazel. And if you want to check out my new website, then I wouldn't be mad at you. It's www.slaywithlulu.com. I feel like we need to tell them to slay. I don't know. We need a little tagline, don't we? What's it going to be? Princesses sweat, queens slay. Cheers. Yeah.